All right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. We are looking live. We're at UFCU Dish Falk Field having a great time. And honestly, I hate to say it, thanks to the Aggies. I think everybody's having a good time. Just Longhorn fans just sitting back, just drinking that tea.
Yes, right.
They call Longhorns tea sippers.
Yeah.
Just sipping that tea, watching the madness go down between the Aggies and the Alabama Crimson Tide. And the Longhorns have a tie, and they have connection to both. Got to play the Alabama Crimson Tide this year. But, of course, the Aggies, who were once a rival, a bitter rival of the Longhorns, will once again be another hated rival for the Longhorns in a couple of years, maybe even next year. The Longhorns end up in the SEC that soon. So it is fun to talk about, to get into a discussion about it. We'll do that. We'll get back to it. I promise you at the 5 o'clock hour, got the sound. We'll play. We got some sound from Sark at the Houston Touchdown Club. So we'll talk about Sark. In my rant of the day, I'm going to talk about some of Sark's comments from the Houston Touchdown Club too. So just so you know, Longhorn fans, I know it seems disrespectful to talk more Aggie on the show than we talk Longhorns. But, you know, I know a lot of Longhorn fans. My man Patrick has told us on the Specs text line, and hit us up via Twitter. Harge is at Hardball Harge. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. If you want to hit us up with some comments or, you know, questions or whatever, or you just want to go off about the Aggies and about Alabama. But he did say that a lot of Longhorn fans are basically hinting that they equally hate Nick Saban and the Aggies.
Right.
So it's kind of – they don't really know. They're torn. A lot of Longhorn fans are torn right now with their disdain for both Nick Saban, the Alabama Crimson Tide, and all things Aggie, including Jimbo Fisher.
Man.
So they don't even know, right? Longhorn fans are conflicted.
Yeah.
Cognitive.
Who are we going?
Business.
Where are we going?
Who do we hate? Whose side are Longhorn? That's the question right there, Longhorn fans. Whose side are you taking in this whole thing?
Man.
That is the real question.
That is
because
the real question.
The thing is, we all know that Nick Saban in Alabama, I don't know if you guys are superstitious. I'm a little stitious, not superstitious, as Michael Scott used to say. All right, but you could argue that the Alabama Crimson Tide started this whole downward spiral for the Longhorns. I mean, it was in that national title game, Colt McCoy gets hurt, and the program has never been the same.
It has been a minute, Rod.
And then Alabama basically did what Texas was doing, started winning a ton of games and competing for championships. Well, they won way more championships in Texas, let's be honest. But still, they went one way to the positive trend, the positive trajectory, and Texas started going down. And really has not recovered. So there's a hatred for all Longhorn fans have, naturally, because Nick Saban's an a-hole and just don't like Nick Saban. I mean, the guy was born on Halloween. I think that's a real true statement. It's a fact. So he is evil. But I know how much Longhorn fans hate the Aggies, too. So I do wonder what side you're on here. So maybe we'll put that poll out there via the Twitterverse, because since we're on the road here, I'll do that on my Twitter. All right, let's get to some discussion about the Mavs and very disappointing first game for the Mavs in the Western Conference Finals. And this is something that we talked about, Harge. We talked about it right after the Mavs won Game 7 against the Suns, and they did it in such a dominant fashion.
Right.
They put the Old Testament style, old biblical style butt-whipping on the Suns in that Game 7, and you saw one of the most lopsided Game 7 wins in NBA history. And they did it on the road against the number one seed in the playoffs. I mean, it was extremely impressive. After an emotional high like that, and by the way, I'll give you a little stat. Teams who won Game 7 in the next round, Game 1 in the next round, for the winners of a previous Game 7, they were 32-50 in the next round. So
32-50?
32-50
okay.
In Game 1 in the next round.
Okay.
So they have a losing record anyway, but think about how high the Mavs were off of that dominant road win over the number one seed Suns, not only on the road against the number one seed, but against the team that had your number, the team that had dominated you over the last 5-6 years. They really had that. I mean, no team had dominated another team in the NBA more than the Suns dominating the Mavs. I'm not making it up. That is actually stats.
Sure.
And so coming off that emotional high of beating them in the Game 7, I think a letdown was almost inevitable. They were just riding too, and it's a young team.
Yeah.
Handling that type of, you know, emotional roller coaster, I just think all week long, the time that they had off, the 4 days or whatever, I just think it was a lot of, look how great we are, we're awesome. I told you we were going to be great. You told me we were going to be great. Man, look how great you are. I'm great. You're great. God, we're so great. And trust me, that Mac Brown, you called it the sugar on your back. That's a lot of sugar on their backs.
A little sweetness going on,
right? And they went out there, and you could tell that all week long, they had just been patting each other on the back. Man, you're great. No, man, you're great. Man, you're awesome. I'm awesome. And I'm sure they were working hard, but they, you know, they that edge they came out there with in that Game 7, they didn't come out there with that kind of edge in Game 1 against Golden State. Golden State had the edge, and they made them play their tempo.
And I was just about to say, that was the biggest – step that I saw. I talked about it yesterday, talking about how the speed of the game is totally different for Golden State in the way that the Mavericks played. Draymond Green was sprinting up the court every time he got a rebound. I don't think Dallas was ready for that. When Steph Curry got the rebound, they were on the run the entire time. Yep. Jordan Poole, anytime they got the rebound, it was let's go. Let's go as fast as we possibly can because Dallas is not used to this speed. They're used to walking it up. Because remember, Chris Paul wasn't sprinting up the floor at all.
No.
He was taking his time and trying to make sure that they were getting in their sets and wanting to run the right plays. No. Draymond and them were running full speed up and down that court, which was impressive to see, but they were off. They had their time off. They were ready to – they were good and rested, and they came out and dominated that game. And, Patrick, I was getting text messages from different people, and they were talking to me about you saying, got to watch out for Max Kleber. Kleber's out there. And Kleber, he was another guy that didn't show up. Bertans didn't show up. The bench players didn't do well. And when we went yesterday, I said, if I'm the Mavericks, if I'm the Golden State Warriors, I'm going to stop Luka from trying to get off and make sure he, you know, distributes to everybody else. Don't let Luka get his points because even if he gets 40 or 50 during these games, you got to make sure those other guys don't get their points. So they took away everything that Luka was trying to do. He got frustrated. He was 3 of 10. He was short on a bunch of his three-point shots. It looked like he wasn't feeling following through. And people were talking about that drinking that beer was supposed to be just an old pitcher. The way he was shooting last night, he might have been on that bottle the whole time.
No, I think he had 18 in the first half, but you're right. I mean, he was not the Luka that we had seen so far in the playoffs. It was his lowest scoring total of these playoffs and third lowest of his career in the playoffs. He had 7 turnovers. I mean, it equaled his combined turnover total from the previous 3 games. Andrew Wiggins. You got to give Wiggins a ton of credit, man.
Shout out to Wiggins.
He drew the assignment, and I thought the belief was that Andrew Wiggins would be overwhelmed by Luka. He was not. He was up to the task. And they decided, you know, Klay Thompson or Jordan Poole, that they didn't, you know, think they were ill-equipped to handle what Luka was bringing to the table, and maybe Wiggins could bring a little bit more physicality, and Wiggins did. And Wiggins also made Luka work defensively because he scored 15 in the first half.
Yeah.
So Luka was working defensively on guarding Wiggins. I think that wore him out a little bit in the first half. And this is the troubling thing for me if I'm a Mavs fan. And yesterday I said I was leaning Golden State in this series. And the reason is because – no, Golden State can have one of their top three or one of their stars have an off night, and they can be okay because they have a lot of different guys that can contribute, whether it be Jordan Poole or, hell, Steph Curry had an off night.
Yes.
In the first half, he had a terrible first half.
Mm-hmm.
He's like 1 of 7. Actually, all of them had pretty much an off first half. Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry, and they still ended up being able to win this game by double digits. Steph Curry did contribute in other ways. I think he missed like his first 5 three-pointers, and he was 1 of 7 in the first half, but had 4 assists, 7 rebounds, led the team in rebounds, had a game high, 12 rebounds, but only 21 points, so he didn't really go off. Andrew Wiggins, you know, had 19 points. Jordan Poole had 19 points. To me, there's still a lot of room for the Golden State Warriors to improve in this series. Of course, for the Mavs, because they lost the game, but the Warriors didn't play their best game either.
Well, the Warriors also were pounding the ball inside. They have 44 points in the paint. And then I was talking about how they were getting the rebounds and taking off and making things happen. They had 18 fast break points last night to 7 to the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, we all know that the Mavericks aren't getting up and down the floor like that, but the Warriors, the way that they played, the pace that they played that game at last night, and the way that it's the heart of the champion, right? You know, they've been in championship games. They've won championships. They haven't had their full complement together with their big three. Hadn't played together in the playoffs in I don't know how long. Klay has been out. Draymond's been out. And then, of course, Steph was missing a couple years where he wasn't playing either. So for them to be back into the playoffs as a group, it's one game. This series isn't over by no means. They've still got to play a bunch of basketball. There's a bunch of basketball games left. But I tell you what, that was very impressive for a team to be able to overcome the poor shooting in the first half and then looking at what the Mavericks did. So the biggest question for me is, what do you think the Mavericks have to do to get back into this series? Because we've always talked about if you win on the road, that's when you really start the series. But they handled home court in the first game. But what would Jason Kidd's adjustments have to look like in the second half? Because they were missing open shots. Those guys were open last night.
Yeah.
The Mavericks were wide open. They just weren't hitting the shots.
48 three-pointers they shot in that game. I think they only made 11.
Yeah, awful.
The 48 three-pointers. So, yeah, it was a really awful shooting night for them. It could just be as simple as got to make shots. Right, they make some of those open three pointers. It's a different discussion because then I think you get the adjustment by on the other side. You get the adjustment on the other side by the Golden State Warriors, and then that opens up the lane a little bit more for Luka and makes things easier on him. So their blueprint didn't really work because they weren't hitting the outside shots. I mean, you didn't have to respect those guys hitting the outside shots, which means you could kind of clog the lane, help defenders against Luka. They did a good job against Luka, man. They picked up Luka, you know, at midcourt, try to make him work for it, try to make him work on the offensive end too. I mean, excuse me, on the defensive end too. And they mixed in different personnel, just throwing different guys at him and help defenders. It was a good game plan, but I think mostly it worked because they went 11 of 48 from three-point range. They won't be that bad shooting from three-point range going forward in the series.
They sure hope not.
but they are dependent on the three-point shot, though. They really are dependent on it. And to your point about the pace, the Mavs had issue with the pace. Remember, the Mavs, they want to play slow. I mean, they are one of the slowest teams in the playoffs. They're one of the slowest teams in the NBA. That's the pace they like to play. Let Luka really control the show and let him dictate the tempo. Here's the quote from Jason Kidd. He said, quote, "We would like to play our pace, but the Warriors have a unique pace. They're going to get out and put a lot of pressure on your defense in transition. We have to be cautious of that. We don't want a track meet."
Yeah.
And it was a track meet.
I'm telling you, they were getting that ball and gone.
Yep.
I was just like, man, I have not seen Draymond move that fast in a very long time. But they did their scouting. They did their self-evaluating and say, look how slow-paced this team is playing. Let's go ahead and turn it up and see if we can get them out of their rhythm, because the way that Luka was moving, it didn't look like he wanted to play. Obviously, he didn't want to play at that pace, but nobody else on that team wanted to get up and down the floor like that either.
Yeah, no question. All right, I got a message for you real quick, and then we got some breaking news, and it's the breaking bad news.
Oh.
I don't know, Patrick, if you remember our breaking bad news sounder, but it's just we might need that if we can find that. All right, real quick, let me tell you about my friends and your friends over at Apple Leasing. They have the ability to put you in any make or model vehicle that you want. It's a beautiful thing. They save you time, money, but they also find your value. Those three things are important to Apple Leasing. They should be important to you too. The professionals over at Apple Leasing can help you get the price you want, the payment you want, on the car you want. All it takes is one phone call or a click on Apple Leasing's website, and you'll get a quote on any make or model vehicle that you want. They can even give you an estimate on the value of your trade-in right over the phone. Apple Leasing's simple interest, easy lease allows you flexibility, which allows you more possibilities and options to help you find the vehicle that fits you best, and more importantly, the vehicle that fits your budget best. Inflation is through the roof. We all feel it. It's never been more expensive to buy a new car or buy a used car, so leasing makes more sense than ever. Call Apple Leasing today at 512-346-9977 and let them see how much money they can save you. Apple Leasing gets all the same discounts and all the same incentives that the dealers do, except they pass those savings on to you. So stop the dealership dance from one dealer to another and let my friends at Apple Leasing work for you. Give them a call, 512-346-9977. That's 512-346-9977. Or visit AppleLeasing.com. That's AppleLeasing.com. All right. You ready for this breaking bad news here?
Patrick.
Is it? Hit us up with it.
Yes.
There it is. It's breaking bad. All right. Jordan Addison. He put out a statement via social media. I'll just read it.
Go ahead.
The last few weeks have been very difficult. I struggled with my decision as to whether I should exercise my right to enter the portal. Student athletes have not always had that opportunity, and I made that choice. I am and will always be grateful to the University of Pittsburgh, to Coach Narduzzi, all my coaches, past and present, the faculty, the fans, supporters, but especially to all my teammates. I love them. Winning an ACC championship is ours forever. Those true friendships will last. A part of me will always be H2P. I'm not sure what that means. I have now carefully considered the advice of my family and close friends and fully weighed both the risks and benefits associated with my decision. I also respect that others may make a different choice. But for me, I will continue my full development as a student athlete by enrolling at USC. Much love always, J.A. What did I tell you? I told you, I said, listen. Austin is an awesome town. It's a great town.
It's unbelievable.
It's an unbelievable town, all right? And it's got a lot. It's got a lot to offer. And Brendan Marion, you know, I wanted Brendan Marion here more than anybody, all right? I wanted him here 3-4 years ago. And finally, I'm glad that Sark is, you know, listening, or at least he thinks like I think. Great minds think alike. And I think Brendan Marion is a triple threat. Great recruiter, great developer, and a great football mind. That's what you want from your coaches. And I'm glad that that because of Brendan Marion and because of Sark's system, which is very wide receiver friendly, we know that he can funnel usage to his best wide receivers, and he can scheme guys open. Scheme me up, Scott. He's one of them. And you do have Quinn Ewers, upgrade at quarterback as well. And, of course, name, image, and likeness. Shout out to BMD.
BMD. Holla at your boys.
The big money donors here. Texas can't compete with anybody in name, image, and likeness. We know that. So I think it might have been a push with some of those things, right? Lincoln Riley is Lincoln Riley. His stamp of approval means as much, if not more, than Sark's stamp of approval in the NFL, right? Caleb Williams, yes, Quinn Ewers is great, but Caleb Williams ain't bad. He was a good quarterback coming out, and they are, you know, homeboys from way back in the day.
Back in the day,
back in the day. Yeah, all right, so they go back, down like 4 flat tires. And then, all right, so, you know, Quinn, all that stuff kind of, it's a push. And I know, you know, Bijan Robinson and Jordan Whittington did a great job of recruiting him. But I think ultimately it may have come down to he wanted to have his last year in college, he wanted to have a great experience overall. It wasn't just all about football.
Right.
It wasn't just all about name, image, and likeness. I think it was a myriad of factors. And I think USC, for him, and the beach.
Yeah, I was going to say, what kind of sand they got out there, dog?
It's nice. Y'all know it's nice when you see
working sand to the beach.
They provided more of that kind of overall encompassing experience that he wanted. And I think that's why he didn't go to Bama. I think he was like, Tuscaloosa?
Right.
Oh, hell no. Or, like Nick Saban just said, Tuscaloosa ain't playing the name, image, and likeness game like everybody else.
That's definitely sound like
a play. And maybe that's what Jordan Ashton was like, you don't want to play the game. Well, I got to tell you, don't hate the player, hate the game.
The game has changed.
Right? So if you ain't got FU money, F off.
Yep.
And I think basically he told Alabama F off then. And I think Texas was willing to play the game, and so was USC. So I think ultimately USC provided just a few more of the data points he was looking for. And it might have, like I said, it might have just been, hey man, I want to wake up and go to the beach.
Yeah.
I want to go run on the beach. I don't know what it was. Nobody does.
Well, I mean, you've been out to L.A. before.
I've been out to L.A. So I'm saying, like, it's something different. You know it's different out there. It's the air smell. It is different.
You can smell it. You can smell it.
We got some fine, beautiful women.
Yeah,
but they got some fine, beautiful women. Or men. Whatever he's into.
Yeah, hey,
whatever.
We're not prejudging.
Exactly. Not there's anything wrong with that. Hey, whatever you want to do. My point is, there's some beautiful people out there.
Yeah.
You want to be around beautiful people on the beach, hanging out with name, image, and likeness, and playing football in Hollywood. It ain't bad. Playing football in Texas, in Austin, Texas, is not bad. But playing football in Hollywood is also not bad.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. And you're going to be around a lot of different people, as you would have been here. But, hey, good luck to that young man. And thank you for not going to Alabama,
because
now we don't have to play you.
You ain't gotta play.
Best of luck to you. Go do your thing, man. You enjoyed yourself here. You can see that all the players enjoyed their time with him as well. And now, you know, we tried to get the – what was it? Come on home from Bijan. Bijan told him to come on home, but I guess he felt home.
Maybe felt at home.
At home out there.
You know, that's a good point. You know how that is.
You know, you've had comfortable, man.
You felt home here. That's why you made that commitment.
That's
When I came to Texas, I was like, oh, this is it. I went to, you know, Florida State and Colorado, I loved Colorado, actually.
Yeah.
It's a great town in Boulder.
Yes, it was. Boulder is beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. But when I did, I came to Texas. I felt it. I was like, oh, my, I feel it. Yeah. I feel it. And it felt different. It's like being with, you know, the person that you feel like you should spend the rest of your life with. You've been with other people before. You've had intimate relations with them, and you've had moments with them. But when you're with the person that you're confident that they're the person you should be able to spend the rest of your life with, there's a feeling.
Yeah.
There's a feeling that you can't quantify. And I think he probably felt that when he went to USC and probably compared that to Texas and went, it's close, but it's USC for
him. And there's a person out there that he's comfortable with, and I can't remember the young man's name, but I believe he's the wide receivers coach for the LA Chargers. So he's got a relationship with another receivers coach that is out there
in the Bay Area?
In that area. Okay. And I saw that report yesterday, so it's just like, okay. Well, I mean, you know, we talked about it. You got to be comfortable where you are. And I know he probably had a great time, and he looked at it and was like, man, this is probably really, really hard for me right now. Mm-hmm. This is making it very tough because this place is great. But we don't know how deep that relationship is with Caleb Williams. They're from the same area.
Exactly.
Got a chance to play with a big-time quarterback with a big-time offensive mind. Same thing could have happened here, but it just seems like that felt better for him. And I'm glad he didn't go to Alabama. So go ahead and enjoy yourself, man.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, everything that Texas could offer, USC probably could offer that and maybe just a little bit better for him,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
The quarterback situation, yes, Quinn Ewers is great, but, hey, with Caleb Williams, they have a pre-existing relationship. So for him, it's like, no, actually, I trust that quarterback for other reasons, and Quinn Ewers is great. And if you go looking at Lincoln Riley compared to Sark, you know, Sark is great, but Lincoln Riley's got a great reputation as well, maybe even a better reputation among NFL scouts and about his system and name, image, and likeness. I don't know if they could beat Texas in name, image, and likeness, but I'm sure they got some big money guys that can throw out some money. They got some sugar daddies out there at USC that can compete. And
probably told him he'll be in the movie and get some extra credit on that, too.
He was hanging out with Snoop.
Yeah.
He's probably smoking joints with Snoop, man.
Like, and it's legal
out
there.
You want to smoke a joint with Matthew McConaughey? Texas can offer you that, but it's like, hey, you want to smoke a joint with Snoop? Matthew McConaughey's like, hey, man, you want to come smoke with me?
Or
you want to smoke with Matthew McConaughey? You want to smoke with Snoop? It's all a preference thing.
You got a chance.
He probably decided, you know what, I want to smoke with Snoop. Yeah. Snoop got better weed than Matthew McConaughey, which I would expect. Willie could trouble everybody, but Willie and Snoop hang out, so I don't know. All right, what you got coming up on Hearts of Life?
I got my man Craig Way coming down to talk to us and kind of give us the implications of this weekend's series between KU and what other teams are up against as they start to make that quest for the Big 12 tournament coming up.
Ladies and gentlemen, guys and dolls, the main event of the evening for your entertainment and pleasure.
Mike, you have to be so combative.
Now, I probably wouldn't say this in front of white folks. But in front of y'all, I'm gonna speak my mind.
He has emotional anger issue problem.
Hey, are you Dirty Mike and the boys?
I'm Mike Lowry.
Michael!
Oh, that's funny. Michael!
Welcome back to a Thursday edition of Ball Don't Lie. We're right out here at UFCU Dish Falk Field enjoying ourselves, watching the Longhorns take batting practice as they get ready to take on the Kansas Jayhawks. You can follow us on Twitter right now. You can get us at Harbaugh Hard. You can follow my man Rod Babers and tweet at him at Rod Babers. And, of course, you can always hit my man Patrick up at It's Patrick Davis. And as we get ready to venture into this weekend, the final home weekend of Texas baseball, we're joined by the greatest voice in sports. And I know he's probably going to say, there's probably a couple other ones. But it definitely, as far as the Longhorns are concerned, and high school football and anything that wants to sound good, my man Craig Way is the one to do it. So Craig is joining us right now to kind of give us a breakdown on tonight's ball game and what's at stake for the Longhorns. Welcome.
Great. Thank you. It's good to be here. And, of course, the minute you start mentioning me in nice circles, somebody will say, that's despicable.
That seems seven to be times. The,
that's
same
the,
time.
That's the operative for word today, isn't it? Despicable?
Despicable.
Here's the other thing that's weird, too. I mean, you guys are, you know, comfortably ensconced
nice.
Here in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Appreciate
you know,
it.
Some people might not even be able to believe that you're outside. So here's like a little batting practice.
There it is. Perfect timing.
Perfect time.
Perfect time.
Here's another one. David Pierce pitching it. That was a bunt.
Little bunt, yeah.
Come on.
All right, here's another one.
Coach Silas Pierce doesn't ever really bunt. There it is.
Yeah, because Harge always talks about the sound.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have to see a ball hit to tell you if it was a good hit or if they got it cleanly.
You know who the first person I ever heard that from was the great Buck O'Neill.
Yeah.
The great Negro League star and manager and all that stuff. And he was on with me and Bill Schoening doing the show during about this time of the day down at the Palmer Event Center way back like in 98. And he talked about that sound. You'd hear it from the bat. The first time I heard that sound. And he heard about it from Ted Williams. And then I was in a clubhouse and I heard that sound. And it was Henry Aaron. And he came out there and he goes, and then I didn't hear it again for years. And the next time I heard that sound, I went out. Who is it? It was Bo Jackson.
Wow. Yeah. That is fantastic.
Yeah. That sound is a special sound.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, and there were some would say that sound gets a little bit registered by Ivan Melendez. You
absolutely.
Know, with what he's doing and that professional approach. And here he is leading the nation in home runs and also leading them in slugging percentage. And he's in second in RBIs. And he's been tremendous. And there's a lot of watch list that are keeping him close. Semifinal list of the Dick Houser Award was announced. He's on that semifinal list today. I have every reason to believe he has a real shot to be the National Player of the Year. The Golden Spikes Award winner, Dick Houser Award winner. He's got a chance to be all of that sort of stuff. And they're probably going to need him, and they're going to need a lot of guys to have a really good run come postseason because – you know, the postseason is probably going to be all spent away from UFC Udish Falk Gill, and barring some weird stuff that might happen with other teams. Because right now, I'd say the Longhorns are on the outside looking in about trying to host a regional, not only because they're in fifth place in the conference standings, and 11-10 in the league does its share of damage to that sort of thing on your resume, because their RPI is decent, their RPI is 17. It's not that. It's the fact that other schools have gotten hot around them.
Yeah.
Texas Tech certainly did them no favors last week by sweeping Oklahoma State.
Correct.
TCU's on top of the conference standings. Texas A&M's on a real roll. If they have a good weekend in Oxford this weekend, the Aggies could be a top eight. Wow. So, you know, there's, you know, other than Jimbo Fisher, things are going well in College Station. So,
hey, some people said that was going well. Aggies like that stuff, man.
Yeah, right.
Donations are rolling in.
There you go. I like your analogy on that. He's playing to his audience.
Exactly.
You know, that kind of thing. So, this might be the final three games of the year, certainly on the regular season schedule, but it might be the final three games of the year, period, for Texas. Go to Arlington next week for the Big 12 tournament. Then you see what happens. They may be on the road for regional or and they've submitted a bid. Maybe it happens like in 14 where they went on the road, won the regional down at Rice, and then they were a higher seed because of an upset with LSU losing to Houston, and they came back and hosted the Super. So lots of different things can happen with that, but David Pierce will tell you right now they just got to take care of their business and handle this Kansas team.
And so when you look at this Kansas team as they come in, obviously they're trying to play to get into the Big 12 tournament, so a lot of games, these games mean a lot more to them right now than it does to Texas. Texas needs these wins, no doubt about it, but they're what's the best that they can do to change their seedings headed up to Arlington?
The Longhorns, in all probability, no matter what they do this weekend, are probably going to be fourth or fifth.
Okay.
They're almost certain to be fourth or fifth, playing OU first game.
Of course.
How does a little Red River baseball at 9 a.m. strike you Wednesday?
That'll be, get people ready for the Alabama-Texas game.
Get you ready for Texas OU. It's almost 11 a.m. anyway.
I start to say, you people out there are complaining about 11 a.m. You know, it's like Jack Nicholson is the Joker. Wait till they get a load of me. You know, what do you see 9 a.m.? Because that's the 4-5 start time.
Oh, wow. Man.
4 versus 5 start. You know, it's interesting how that works, fellas, because for years when the Big 12 tournament was in Oklahoma City, they would not announce the start times of the games until like Sunday night after the end of the regular season. We all knew why.
Right.
It was because they wanted to see if Oklahoma and Oklahoma State were going to be on the same side of the bracket. They put them in the primetime bracket. They wanted them in the evening to boost attendance. They always denied it. We always knew that was the case. Here, it's going to be in Arlington. Oh, here's your start times. Find that out. We'll have those printed at the start of the year. You know? So it's going to be 9 a.m. for 4 versus 5 matchup. And if they're in the 4 versus 5 game, First pitch, Longhorns and Sooners will be at 9 o'clock in the morning next Wednesday.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah, and OU will still suck. Even
yeah.
At 9 a.m. Somehow. They will.
At 9 a.m., that can happen. You know?
And they'll be hopeful for the Longhorn
yeah,
fans.
No yeah. I think for the Longhorns' perspective, in terms of they want to handle their business this weekend, get on a roll going into Arlington. There's an outside shot maybe to host a region, but more importantly, playing well, going in, get their bullpen the way they want it. I think all of those are important things. And then you see what happens, you know, when you get the draw after that, after the Big 12 tournament in Arlington next week.
So what if they go up to Arlington, play unbelievable baseball, end up winning the Big 12 tournament? Because I was looking at the numbers. If they sweep this weekend, go up to the Big 12 tournament, that'll get them over 40 wins for the season. But because of some of the games that have happened this year, and I know RPI plays a factor in it, and I want to talk to you a little bit about the RPI situation as well. But is there an outside chance that Texas, if they go on a roll, because this seems to be that perfect time where Texas baseball decides, all right, let's ratchet up a little bit, and they normally go through this run. Is that something that could play for Texas to be able to host a regional?
Well, at the risk of sounding dumb or even dumber, you're telling me there's a chance. There is a chance. put it in your terms, Harge, if they sweep this weekend series, go to Arlington, win all four games without dropping one, and win it. That's 9 straight wins going into the NCAA.
Yep.
They have a Big 12 conference tournament trophy. I don't think that carries as much weight with the committee as how you're playing and what's going on with the RPI, the strength of schedule. They probably would have beaten TCU twice, 2 good RPI wins, and then maybe a Texas Tech or an Oklahoma State in the final, something like that to win it. Under this scenario, it would be all of that. And even then, however, I think there'd have to be some help with some other teams on the fringe, on the outside falling. Not necessarily Tech or TCU, but not both of them getting in. Texas State still has hopes. Now, they were part of that whole RPI game dumping thing to make sure they could protect RPI. It's a little bit different in the Bobcats. They're trying to protect to make sure they get in the field if they don't win the conference tournament in Montgomery next week. I've maintained all along, if they win the Sun Belt regular season, and I think they'll get that done tonight or tomorrow, all they need is one win over Georgia State. They win that, one of those 3 games in Atlanta, they win the regular season. I think they're in the field regardless of what they do in Montgomery. But the Longhorns are trying to do that. Kansas, you brought up, they need a miracle. They need to sweep the Longhorns, and they need Baylor to get swept by Oklahoma State. Baylor getting swept by Oklahoma State, that's not far-fetched. Even in Waco, it's not. But Texas dropping all 3 to Kansas, I don't see that happening. But all of that would have to happen for Kansas even to make it to Arlington as the 8th seed next week.
As you look at the RPI and everything that's been happening with it, you know, the big story is everyone dumping these games. And I know that you had a chance to speak to Coach Pierce about it. And the big thing for me with all these teams dumping these games is if you go out there and win, it's not going to hurt you. But if you go out there and lose – it probably would hurt you. So why wouldn't you just want to take that risk? Well, they didn't want to take that risk. But then I also realized, too, that some of the teams that were dumping these games had conference tournaments that are going to start sooner than later, and they didn't want to use their pitching. But overall, do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing so far?
Well, I would say this. I don't think that just dumping, canceling games is good for college baseball anytime. I don't. That said, and having talked to Ty Harrington about it and talking to Coach Pierce about it, I understand the reasons why the coaches did it. Texas A&M was to have played Houston Baptist, I guess it was. No, Incarnate Word. Yeah. And Texas State was to have played Houston Baptist, and TCU was to have played Tarleton. All of 3 of those teams had RPIs just right around or even higher than 200. Those are the ones that hurt you even if you beat them. When Texas Southern was here, Texas beat them 12-2, dropped the spot in the RPI because the RPI was so low. But David Pierce said, there's no way. I've known Michael Robertson, the coach at Texas Southern, for 25 years. Do you think I'm going to call him and say, hey, we got to dump this game?
Right.
He said, I couldn't sleep at night if I did it. I understand the motivation behind him, what they're doing. Now, Coach Pierce kind of, when he was on with Aaron this morning, mentioned something. And maybe this is a or the solution. Maybe at the end of all the evaluative tools, when they go into it, you pull out your lowest RPI opponent. Just dump that game completely. Take it out. You know,
for everybody.
Well, for everybody.
Okay.
So in other words, You took a test. You were in a semester of college, and your professor goes, I'll drop your lowest grade.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Why not drop the lowest grade RPI? He mentioned one game. I think they should do it with two. Right. I think take your two lowest RPI wins. If you lose, you lose. Or you could say your two lowest RPI games because you agreed to play them in May. Like, for example, Miami's ranked 8th in the RPI. They played Gulf Coast the other night, got beat, dropped three spots.
Exactly.
Oklahoma was 24 in the RPI, went 160 miles up to play a sub-500 Wichita State team, got the gunwally beat out of them, 18-0, and dropped five spots in the RPI. So folks go, see?
Right.
So maybe if you can drop your lowest one or two, or maybe your lowest RPI win and your lowest RPI loss, and you can drop those out of the formula, maybe that's the solution to keep schools from dumping games late in the season so that they play.
That's not a bad idea at all. When I heard that too, I was thinking I took it to a grade school type of deal where the teacher says, hey, I'm going to drop this lowest grade for you because I'm going to get you back to where you need to be. So it's grade school,
philosophy of journalism in North Texas I took. You know?
I was going to say, at Texas, we did that a couple of times too. Everybody celebrates.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody
wins on that one.
Absolutely. Just go ahead and drop your lowest grade, no matter any of that. So, you know, maybe there's some sort of thing there. But I know this program, it means a lot to them. They're fan base, they're season ticket base to play every game on the schedule. I'd say we're probably not going to get rain this weekend, so the Longhorns are going to wind up playing their max of 56 regular season games when all is said and done.
Right.
It's good stuff.
Man, this is great. This is one of those things that you sit here and the way that it's all breaking down. And this is something, too, for Texas fans. They're not used to being in this situation. When was the last time that Texas made it to a regional and wasn't hosting most of the time?
David Pierce's first year in 17 went out to Long Beach, beat UCLA the first day, beat Long Beach the second day. They were in the winner's bracket and lost two heartbreaking one-run games Sunday night to force the if-necessary game Monday night, lost that one, lost two heartbreakers, and came home after that. That was in 17. In 18, they had home regional, won it, but then they were supposed to go to Oxford, except Tennessee Tech had other ideas.
Right.
They knocked out Ole Miss.
And Tennessee Tech came here.
So Tennessee Tech comes here. Texas beats them. They go to Omaha. Back in 14, I mentioned the Longhorns go down. They win the Rice Regional, and LSU loses to U of H. So at that point, U of H comes here. The Houston fans grumbling because they were a 2-seed. Texas was a 3-seed and said, you know, we shouldn't have to do that. You know, we're a higher seed. Yeah, tell your athletic director to submit a bid next time. That might help you. Didn't submit a bid. So that's why that happened. Nowadays, I know folks ask a lot about the money thing and the bid, and Texas wouldn't be up. The money thing is immaterial. I talked to Chris Del Conte, who served on the committee for a decade. He said that the money thing went out some time ago. There's a ceiling on what you could bid anyway. It's not about that so much. Mm. It's a lot of other things. So you folks who have hope for the possibility, however outside it may be, of Texas State hosting a regional, they got a shot.
Yeah. Okay.
They got a shot. If they run the table, say they sweep the series in Atlanta this week and sweep through and win the tournament in Montgomery, they're sitting at 46 wins.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to keep them out from
hosting. They've submitted a bid.
Yeah.
So, and their RPI is climbing. It's in the 20s. It might need to go a little higher. But A&M's RPI is like 18 right now, and they're being mentioned as a top 8. RPI is a tool sometimes used by tools to be able to come up with a formula. It doesn't always – it's not a be-all, end-all anything, which brings us back to the original discussion.
Oh, that was great. All-time great line. I love that. And like George Costanza on the high note there, Craig. All right, thanks, Craig. We appreciate you, brother, as always.
As I say, I'd say, well, I'm done here. I'm
out. All right. Craig Way on the call with my man Hardball Hards. You got the pregame coming up at 6:15. All right, we'll come right back, get into a little off the record. Lolo Jones still can't get a man, and I wonder why. We'll talk about that on the other side right here on Ball Don't Lie, 104.9 The Horn.
D.D. Mega Doodoo. I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a brain bag comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F-ing thing sucks.
All right, welcome back. to Ball Don't Lie, another edition of Off the Record. And this comes from our good friend Robert Littal over at Black Sports Online, BSO. The New York Post originally had this story, and it's about Lolo Jones, the Olympic hurdler and bobsledder, by the way.
Yep.
She's talking about one of the greatest athletes on the planet. She's 39 years old now, and she's frustrated with her dating life. She actually went to Instagram to complain about this, so we're not prying into her private life. She made her private life public, which so many people do on social media. So this is what happened. Basically, she basically took to Instagram and said she was tired of men constantly teasing her about her decision to abstain from sex. She is, of course, a virgin and decides to remain a virgin until she is married. Good for her. She said, quote, tonight I blocked the guy I was talking to for 8 months. My heart just couldn't take it anymore. He gave me so many mixed signals. He would talk about marriage and kids, but then keep me in the friend zone. He would never make time to see me. My heart is so heavy. She said she's exhausted. She said, I even prayed if God didn't want me to be married to remove the desire from my heart. But as the years grow, I want to be married more and desire badly to have a family of my own. And I just keep getting my heart broke. She said, I get teased all the time because I won't have premarital sex. Guys will DM me that I'm old, I'm washed up, and I should just put out already. So I'm just crying out, where are you, God? Oh, man, she's getting deep
here. I told you.
Your word says, John 14:14, if you ask me anything in my name, I will do it. I'm asking God to please honor the desire of my heart. Your word says two are better than one. Ecclesiastes 4. I mean, yeah. She gets into the Bible verses. She says, I'm just asking God to honor my heart because faith is hurting right now. I'm tired of getting teased. I'm asking God, my father, my protector, my provider, please show up. Please honor me. That is sad, though. It is sad that so it's easier for people. You can go online. This is easier today to meet somebody who is like-minded, all right, and wants to live your type of lifestyle, whatever the hell that is,
right,
than ever before. Yo, they got Christian Swingers, Meet.com. They got, SugarDaddies.com. We got right. All these different sites to help people get together of a specific type. She can't find – I know there's a – I'm not saying a virgin on – no, whatever. But I'm sure there's a website.
AC Green is not available, man.
If I looked, I guarantee I can find me a website for people who want to abstain from sex until they're married, a dating site for those people. There's a dating site for people who want to, for me, Jewish people who want to meet. Like,
that's right.
Dating site for everybody. Afro-mans, people who like biracial relationships. It's for everybody. Why is there not a
Wait,
dating?
Did you say Afro-mans?
Afro-mans. Okay. Like romance.
Mans, I got
Afro-mans. Oh, no, it's real. It's for biracial relationships.
Really?
I'm not making that up. Oh, okay. That cannon went off. You said they were going to
fire
that cannon.
I told you fire that cannon,
freaked
man.
Freaked me out just now, man. But anyway, you telling me there's, I'm going to look it up right now. You talk while I look up virgin dating sites.
Okay, so here's my biggest thing about that. Number one, she's put it out there publicly, so you're going to get creeps and all kinds of other people that are going to hit you up on your Instagram, your social, and they're going to attack your – I guess it's definitely your character because that is something that you are embedded with and your beliefs, so you didn't want to go out and do that. But if you're quote-unquote talking to someone for 8 months and this person already knows who you are because of that, why did you decide to waste your time? They banging that
cannon
on
me again. Sorry.
Fire cannon.
It just got your boy again.
Yeah, they're out there. They got intentional talk on MLB Network is out there, and they're filming from Dish today. And so that's why that cannon is getting fired off. The other cannon that's trying to get fired off is trying to holler at Lolo. So they're trying to make that work. And for me, I just really wish that she – wouldn't have put it out there if she wanted to pray for it and she wanted to cry out for it. Because, again, I don't know if putting it out there, you're going to find that person who is going to look for you to be that person. Because let's say Mike Harge is that person, right? I'm that guy. I've been waiting for this moment, and I'm looking for someone like Lolo. I could hit three different angles on Lolo.
What?
What'd you say?
what?
Pause.
I can hit. Excuse me?
I can hit three different things about Lolo that you were just talking right. about. The biracial level.
Like, whoa.
The biracial level, the athlete level, and then the virgin level.
You're right,
so
yeah.
You can hit all.
I found the website, youandmeareperior.com.
See?
That's a version. This is a dating website for versions.
So that's where she should have went. She should have put a profile on that.
That's what I'm saying. Go find. I'm with you.
You were talking about the Christian Mingle earlier. I mean, there's so many different areas in which you can find like-minded individuals.
Yeah.
So for her to go on this crusade.
Yeah.
And then bring all the scriptures to us during this time, there was a place for her to do that. So now she's getting teased, right? Everybody's teasing me. You put this out for people to find out about.
But she did say people are sliding into her DMs anyway, teasing her about abstaining, which is, you know, that's terrible.
Yeah, that is terrible.
You should be, one wants to abstain, let abstain. My point is, like, get into dating apps and online dating, all that kind of stuff. I'm sure that would help her out.
Afromance. What'd you say?
Afromance.
Okay.
I don't even know if it's still a thing, but
I'm looking it up
was,
right now.
Oh yeah, it was for if people wanted to date like biracial dating into multiracial dating.
Okay.
Which I am. I mean, Rainbow Coalition.
Yeah. Love that. Equal opportunity.
Exactly. All right. Enough about Lolo Jones. We'll come back. We'll get into Jimbo Fisher. We'll get to Jimbo Fisher and yes, the comments, the beef he now has with Nick Saban. We'll play those comments, and yes, we will dissect and decipher all of that and more. Right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9.